here this morning, and I really think that it sets a real good example, I hope, which other ministers will also follow, because we do need them to bring us the other side. After all, the people sitting here before us, and that is Advocate Lutando, just wanted to look at it very carefully, is it Kumatela, chairperson of the Space Council. Well, I, of course, in reference to space, I didn't know that. You are sitting there. I'm a great devotee of the space. And then, of course, Miss Nomfuneko Majaja, who's the chief director, and, of course, under whom this falls for the operational side and direction. Thank you very much for being here with us this morning. We also have with us a colleague of Mr. Herman, and that is, I just don't know Bradley's surname. Yeah, Mr. Fulyun. We plan to just use first names, and then we get stuck when we do these introductions. And with us all, also sitting here is someone that we were talking about, Minister, for some time when you were a chairperson, having a content specialist. We now have them. And so we now have Ms. Hurling here with us as a content specialist, and of course the committee members on our right from all parties who will just join us around there. The researcher, who's only ever late because he's in such demand by all of us to do research, and that is Mr. Mishlangu.
This room is never a comfortable room for any committee.
You know, I know.
For whatever happens, this must be the last place we ask to have a.
It's terrible. Space Council to come to this.
Ironically.
I think part of the problem is that there are quite a few meetings taking place today, as members are aware. We are not normally in this kind of situation with so few venues to call upon, but it's just what with all these different committees on. But we will ask the administration to please, especially when we're getting a presentation, to avoid this problem. Yes, Mr. Honourable Njikalana, you may want to stay there because it's so tight here. You can't see, though, can you?
No, I can.
Because it was a chair down here, if that was helpful. All right. Okay. In that case, I didn't want to take up too much time. I wanted us to get on with the presentation, but check with the Minister first. Did you want to say something right at the beginning, Minister, or preferably at the end of the presentation? And then I'd also ask members...
I did not come to make a presentation. I just came to join the meeting. So I don't feel like saying anything all the time, because most people will come to the meeting. We need to give the officials an opportunity to make presentations, unless if there's something important that you want us to say, then we can do that. But I thought, let me just be.
So it's finally over to yourself, Miss Majaja. Is it? Yes, Miss Majaja.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honored members, for having us here today on the topic of space and ratification of the United Nations Convention. We feel really honored also to have the Deputy Minister with us here today, honored and protected, I believe. Thank you very much. I would like to start with the role of the DTI versus the DST, which is usually a question that arises all the time, to actually put things into perspective before I go into the presentation. Chairperson, the DTI, in addition to its known role, mandate of developing industry and enterprises and promote trade, has to ensure that there is a conducive environment for participants to operate in a thriving manner. So as a result, in this particular arena, the DTI plays industry development role and a regulatory role. In addition to that, the DTI is a custodian of the primary legislation, which is the Space Affairs Act of 1993, was amended in 1995. This act actually establishes the Space Council, as we have the chairperson of the Space Council here today. The Space Council being the regulatory body of space-related matters. It also serves to advise the Minister and the DTI on space issues. The Act also requires that we formulate, as the DTI, the National Space Policy, a copy of which I have circulated for all the honorable members here today for perusal. Over and above that, the policy has to actually ensure a coordination role that is, it has to be played by the DTI and the various agencies of government. On the other hand, the DST, which is science and technology, ensures that the science and technological part of space is taken care of. Space is a highly technological sector, and it involves a lot of R&D and innovation. So that's where DST comes into play. But over and above that, DST serves as an implementer of the space program. And that is why it is in the process of establishing the space agency, which has to move forward in actually implementing the new resuscitated space program for the country. The program which will be looking at ensuring that we tackle various socioeconomic challenges that we have in the country. I will from there move into the presentation, starting by giving a background. South Africa has been a member of the United Nations Committee on Peaceful Uses of Outer Space since 1994. This committee itself was set up by the General Assembly in 1959 to review the scope of international cooperation in peaceful uses of outer space, as well as to study legal programs arising from the exploration of outer space. The United Nations has thus five conventions related to space, and South Africa is party to two of these, being the Outer Space and the Search and Rescue Convention. And now we would like to ratify two more of those. Recently, there have been developments within the country, domestic developments and some international developments. These being proved by the fact that our cabinet in December last year actually approved the space policy I alluded to earlier on, as well as the National Space Strategy, which was led by the DST. We are also planning to launch the first government microsatellite called the Sambandilasat later during the course of the year. And all these developments, they require us that we comply with relevant international standards and obligations. More on the developments within South Africa, I talked to Space Affairs Act, which we are the custodian of, as well as the National Space Policy. They both put emphasis on the international standards and obligations in order for South Africa to be viewed as a responsible and a trustworthy user of outer space. And then in recognition of the international conventions, the South African Council for Space Affairs was appointed by the DTI Minister in 2006 to regulate space affairs, monitor and register space assets. We talked to the approval of the National Space Policy. Over and above that, the South African Space Agency was established to coordinate and implement space-related activities in South Africa under the Department of Science and Technology. So the agency itself is regarded as an institutional vehicle that will actually ensure that we implement the space program in the country. We need also to understand the benefits that we can derive from space-based technology. This could actually assist the country in a number of challenges, including communication, navigation, ensuring that we are monitoring the disasters that we are usually experiencing and manage them appropriately. We also, on top of natural resource management for agricultural purposes, for ensuring that we are able to monitor the water levels and the resources that we have in the country. Over and above that, space could assist us in health and education issues through telehealth and tele-education services, where we could actually link maybe the hospitals or the clinics in the rural areas with the hospitals in urban areas, which has which actually have specialist doctors. Now, if we look at the purpose of why are we here today, we are here to request parliamentary approval for ratification of the treaties, which are the Convention on the International Liability for Damage Caused by Space Objects, usually called the Liability Convention of 1972, as well as the Convention on Registration of Objects Launched into Outer Space, which is the Registration Convention of 1975. On June 8, our minister tabled the above-mentioned conventions along with explanatory memorandum on the Liability and Registration Conventions, which have been referred to this committee for adoption. So the purpose of the briefing is actually to provide information to this committee on the contents of the convention, such that the portfolio committee can approve the ratification. More on our introduction would include the general practice of what is taking place in other space-faring nations. It's usually an accepted general practice among the space-faring nations to actually comply with relevant United Nations conventions in the interest of maintaining space environment as a secure, predictable environment for the pursuit of peaceful, scientific, technological, and commercial activities by all nations. So before these treaties can come into force, they have to be ratified by Parliament. In South Africa, ratification process is done according to the Constitution, Article 231 of that, which actually states that an international agreement binds the Republic only after it has been approved by resolution in both National Assembly and National Council of Provinces. So as I've mentioned, the Space Affairs Act, as amended in 1995, as well as the policy, are putting an emphasis on compliance with international standards and obligations in order for South Africa to be viewed as a responsible and a trustworthy user of outer space. Now, if we can zoom into our conventions themselves, we start with the International Liability, excuse me, Chairperson, Convention for Damage Caused by Space Objects. This convention is actually providing with information about launching states that are liable for damage caused by their space objects on the Earth surface or to aircraft in flight, and also to space objects of another state or to persons or property on board of those objects, that means on the aircraft, excuse me, in flight, as well as the space objects. The convention also stipulates a procedure that has to be followed should a state suffer damages and how the claims should be lodged to the launching state. The convention has a number of articles, but we have extracted a few that has legal implications and has an important impact on the state to actually understand. The Article 1 actually talks to the definitions and the descriptions of what is contained in the convention itself. It starts by describing air damage, which means it's a loss of life, personal injury, or other impairment to health, or loss of or damage to property of the states or of persons of natural origin or of juridical origin, or property of international intergovernmental organizations. The damage could be caused by the space object on the surface of the Earth or to aircraft flight, including the component parts of the space object itself, as well as the launch vehicle which is used to launch the spacecraft. And then it goes on to talk about the launching state. What is the launching state in this instance? It's a state that launches or procures the launching of a space object, or from whose territory or facility a space object is launched, irrespective of the success of the launch or not. Article 2 here talks about the liability, because we heard about the liability, which is absolute or strict liability, which is Article 2 of the Convention. This article imposes on a launching state of states, because states can actually come together and launch together, as well as those states members of intergovernmental organizations, to pay compensation for damages caused by its space object on the surface of the Earth. From that article number 2, it flows into article number 3, which actually talks to damages as a result of a fault arising from the state itself. So for damages which occur elsewhere other than on the surface of the Earth to a space object or to a personal property on board of the space object belonging to another state, the launching state shall, in this regard, only be liable if the damage is due to its fault or to fault of persons for whom it is responsible. Now, moving to Article 4, 7, and 8, which talks to joint and several liability in a case where there are two or more states that are responsible for a joint launch of a space object. The two states shall be jointly or severally liable to the third state, meaning that the compensation will be apportioned between them according to the extent of their fault. If fault cannot be established, the burden of compensation will be equally apportioned between the two states. Now, Article 7 talks about how do we present the claims for compensation. A state which suffers damage or whose natural or juridical person suffer damage may present to a launching state a claim for compensation for such damage. In a case where we are unable to find a diplomatic solution in the claims, there is a need for an establishment of a claims commission. A claims commission comprising of three members would have to be established at the request of either party, either the launching state or the state that has actually suffered damages. Now, moving into our second convention, which is the registration convention, which is a registration of objects launched into outer space. This convention provides that launching states shall maintain registries of space objects and must furnish specified information on each space object launched for inclusion in the Central United Nations Register. So this means that the United Nations actually is keeping a central register, and this should be done on a mandatory basis. The convention also stipulates that the information should be furnished to the Secretary General of the United Nations. The mandatory system of registering objects would actually assist the states in identification of the space objects themselves, and would also contribute to the application and development of international law governing the exploration and use of outer space. Article 1 and 2 of the Convention talks about the state of registry and the national registry. So we will not be talking about the space object and the launching here, as we have covered that in the Liability Convention, but they sort of go together. So what is the state of the registry? A launching state on whose registry a space object is carried out is called state of registry. But all states should maintain a national registry of all space objects launched by them and inform the Secretary General of establishment of such a register. I will profusely apologize to our honorable members. There's an error of a repetition of page 13 into page 14 and 15. But we have the copies that have been corrected will be available after the presentation. This means that we'll go to page 16 on our presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. Article 4 of the Convention states that launching objects actually mentions that the states that are launching objects should provide information with regard to those objects for inclusion in the UN register. Information that must be contained here should be the name of the launching state, an appropriate designator of the space object, or its registration number for ease of identification. Also, the date, the territory, or the location of the launch should be included here. The basic orbital parameters such as nodal inclination, apogee, and perigee should be contained, which actually means specifications regarding the inclination of the satellite, which means which side will the satellite be facing. The general functions of the space object should be contained. For instance, our Sambandela satellite that we will be launching later this year has a communication payload as well as a remote sensing payload. So that's what it's expected to be doing, as well as a research payload. Article 4 talks about the registration number, which we referred to earlier on. Whenever a space object is launched into the Earth orbit or beyond, is marked with a designator or registration number and shall notify the Secretary General of this fact when submitting information regarding the space object. Now, we have covered the critical articles within the conventions themselves. We felt it's necessary that we talk about the implementation of these conventions, should they be ratified. The Space Council has a strategic plan of 3 years and operational plan on an annual basis. as I've mentioned, that it's being housed at the DTI, and this will serve as an implementation plan of the treaties. The council will therefore manage the national registry for space objects launched into outer space. The DTI will monitor the implementation of the conventions and provide this information for inclusion in the United Nations register. We need to understand the benefits of ratification of this convention. What are we as a country going to benefit from this? The first benefit is that space activities must be carried out freely, but in a well-established legal framework, which is cushioned with regulations, which is generally accepted by the large majority of states, in order to avoid the temptation of unilateral practices from space-faring nations. The ratification will also increase confidence in safety of space activities in the country and outside, as the Outer Space Treaty requires states to bear international responsibility for national activities in outer space, as well as to provide necessary authorization and supervision of such activities in line with the principles set forth in the Convention. Of particular importance here is adherence to the Liability Convention, which provides international rules and procedures for peaceful settlement of disputes and for claiming for compensation. It therefore guarantees the protection of the interests of the states and their nationals in case of damage caused by space objects. More benefits that we could derive from ratifying the treaties will also proving credibility of South Africa and compliance of South Africa to international outer space affairs, since outer space is actually an unbounded arena. This will actually assist South Africa to get into credible cooperation agreements with other countries of the world for mutual benefits. This will also open up opportunities for South Africa or for South African space communities, such as government, the industry, government organizations, and so on, to work with the highly technological international world, and especially with the other developing nations that have already started their space programs and have been reaping fruits from that, such as India, for instance. In conclusion, Chairperson, adherence to these conventions will prove to be highly beneficial for South Africa, not only for states that are involved directly in space activities, but also for states that are not currently carrying out activities in other states, because they can also fall victim of damage caused by space objects to the surface of the earth or to aircraft in flight. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Ms. Majaja, for that presentation. Really do appreciate it. But I think there are a number of questions. I'll just check first if perhaps Minister Tobias, if you wanted to come in just yet. Right. Then we have Honourable Ambrosini, Honourable Kotsi, Honourable Mthuli, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a very exciting field for me personally, for biographical reasons, which I will spare you. But this convention, especially the Liability Convention, has been open for acceptance for 35 years. We are now looking at it. And the main purpose, I would say 99% of the purpose of these two conventions, failing the remote possibility of something falling from the sky on your national territory, the main purpose if we want to become a launching state. We launch satellites, we need to register and be part of the liability. The conventions themselves do not affect the rest of the considerations given by the presenter, the space cooperation, all the good things of satellite implementation, because there is those are there irrespective of the convention. We can cooperate in space policy and we can have the benefits of satellite communication. So the real question crisply before this committee, I submit, is that of applying our mind to the entire issue of becoming a launching state. And this is a step in that direction, an important step. And I want to ask a couple of questions in that respect, because the mention has been made that there will be the launch of a government satellite. My understanding, to be corrected by the presenter, is that in terms of accessing any satellite service, it is not cost-efficient. There might be reasons of government pride, secrecy, whatever it is, to have our own satellite. But from a strictly allocation of money in this harsh time in which money is scarce, it doesn't seem to make sense as a way of spending money. That's one, the first question. The second question, I personally would like to see the commitment in the WTO about satellite communications. I saw them up to 2002, and what was terrifying to me is that the DTI was making no commitment in respect of satellite communication, which means that preserved the right to impose an absolute ban on foreign satellite communications within South Africa or South African nationals using foreign satellites. Now, which made no sense because there were no South African satellites. So why having a no commitment strategy if there are no South African satellites? Telkom can only use South African satellites. So I look at the picture of no commitment, that we launch our own satellite, and what I see behind the corner, which terrifies me, and I say this to be assured this is not the case, it's another big monopoly, where the next step is going to be that of saying, now we got your own satellite, you can only use the South African satellite, Telkom or somebody else will own it, and if you want to communicate to any other satellite, the point of entry is going to be the South African satellite. So these are my fears, these two aspects, if I can be reassured tangibly that there's no direction. And if I may, through the chairman, request that perhaps the committee cite all the latest WTO commitments in this matter submitted by the DTI.
Thank you. What I should have said at the outset, honourable members, is that we had a lot more freedom in the first 2 weeks. Now, what I would like is for us to restrict it to two questions, as has been done in this case, but also to ensure that we can try to complete those that input within at least 2 minutes. So it's two questions and no repetition. Thank you. We then have the next person here, Honourable Kotsi.
I don't know how far we can go with that respect. Perhaps for me, unlike the previous speaker, I do not have quite a clear know-how about the subject here, and perhaps as times move on, we'll be able to learn a lot about these treaties. My question would be then, how have we... In fact, I want to start, Chair, by saying at some of the meetings, maybe the meeting before last, you were very strong at saying as a committee we need to look at these treaties that Convention has signed without us participating as members. I feel that they come to us just for ratifying as members of parliament, whereas we were not part of the process. This, for me, is like the same, and perhaps we only come at the tail end, and I'm aware that there has been many that has been signed by members of parliament. Only later we realize that we should have actually interrogated these more and perhaps be part of the process. At this stage, perhaps I would want to ask, has our government, being part of this process towards this level where we are now, and perhaps the other question would be this board. I hear it involves a lot of science and technology. It's a technical issue. I mean, is accountability to us as a trade and industry, or is it with science and technology? You know, how is the link that? If you can, for me, just give a more definition of space object. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse my ignorance.
As a matter of fact, I'm sure many of us share that. So, but really, the adequate time, a lot of time on your side. Thank you. Honourable Ntuli.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I was asking myself why this is it at DTI instead of being at a state security, because my man tells me that it's about security of the country. So I wanted to find out why is it located at the DTI instead of at a security cluster, or it can be defense, and maybe if I can be enlightened on that one, or just to highlight how does it influence our trade and industry, if you can reply in that one. Number two, You said the liability for damages, it's liable if the fault is of a particular lodging state. What if let's say a lodging state is not at fault, it's not their fault, then who is liable for the damages? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Mine is when we talk of penalties, who decides the amounts of penalties? In other words, who is above what body makes all these critical decisions? And what constitutes that body? If we talk of the whole world, how is it constituted? And also, the schematic of United Nations, in as far as this gets connected, just so that I can visualize how it connects to the overall a schematic. And then the last one, it's the funding. How is the funding done to run this? Is it United Nations that does that funds it? Is it a budget from United Nations, or is it that member countries contribute?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to clarify it. If you speak about the Earth surface, are you also including the territorial waters of a state, or that doesn't count? Secondly, I also was not very sure about the spacecraft, whether that also includes commercial flights or not. Thirdly, the legal framework that we have. You said that we are party to two conventions already. If we want to sign these additional conventions, does our legal framework that we have currently cover these conventions, or we will ratify and thereafter look at the legal framework to cover ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Njikalana.
Thanks, sir. See, I've got two sets of questions, some very specific, some broad because of the newness of this area.
I'm sorry, Honorable Njikalana, I still want us to try and stick within the time frame, and then there'll be a chance to come back and dig deeper.
That's what I'm saying. I'll start with the specifics. Just as a matter of interest, the conventions, as a matter of interest, when were they negotiated? I see in some, there's reference to 1972 and 75. One would assume that all the conventions that we're talking about, or I would just specifically on this one. Number two, in the South African Space Agency as a body, is there any rep from DTI? If there's one, what role does that rep play? If there's none, why not? We're ratifying, or about to ratify, convention. Just as a matter of interest, is there space in the future for reviewers? Sorry, I'm just scribbling this on my piece of paper. In terms of a space object, reference is made to an appropriate designator or registration number. I'm just curious, how is that done? You know, you register a car and receive the registration. You register an aeroplane, you receive the registration. Now, when it is a safe object,
when it comes down,
how is that done? A question was asked. I don't know whether by Ubabu Nduli now, whatever. To me, the contents of that question, or an expansion of that question, was just to know the exact role or clearly defined roles, or maybe even generally, of the various departments that seem to be involved in this area. You've made mention of DST and DTI and even DIRCO. It's called DIRCO now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because then one is just interested, you know. There are usually things like this, so whereby a certain program, you know, draws the participation of various departments. So it would be helpful to just check from us, you know, how do the various departments get involved, maybe through the space agency or whatever. Thanks for now, Chair.
Thank you very much. And a favor to the department is to the chief director there. Ms. Majaja, how you want to run it, if you'd like to respond to them yourself or allow the team to share the responses.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'll really request that the team shares the questions, but I'll take some questions myself, and then I'll request Advocate to take some of the questions that has a very strong legal bearing, and as far as the space is concerned. I'll start by a question, I think, which was asking as to whether we are a launching state at the moment. I will mention that, excuse me, both the space policy and the strategy, they talk about South Africa having
continued access to space. And not specifically talking about launching on our own at the moment. We are not planning to be our own launch, to be a launching state like in the first 5 to 10 years. But in the next 5 to 10 years, we will be relying on other states to launch for us. We will be procuring the services of other states who are already in this business. For instance, the Sambandla satellite will be launched in Russia. We've procured the services of the Russians to assist us in that regard. So this is not in our priority list being to be able to launch, because there are a number of various infrastructure, ground infrastructure, highly technological equipment that is required for that, which we are unable to actually fund at the moment. The other question was talking about the involvement of government, the involvement of government in the process, which I think I will answer that question together with the question from Honorable Member Njigelan about the involvement of other government departments. I mentioned earlier on that we have within the DTI what is called a Space Council. A Space Council is a body that is comprised of various government departments. It's comprised of members of various government departments that are administering space-related matters. For instance, we have the Department of Communications sitting there. The Department of Foreign Affairs is part of the council. The DST is part of the council. The Defense is part of the council. We are now looking at including more other departments such as agriculture, as I've talked about natural resource management. We are planning to include health and education within the council itself. The council also has, over and above that, two members coming from the industry. So I would say that this process has been inclusive in that sense, whereby all these departments are sitting here, are sitting in the council, and even the conventions were discussed within the council, and the council actually approved that they require to be ratified because of the developments that I have mentioned earlier on. These processes do not actually are divorced from each other, because even the policy itself was quite a consultative process where we met as various departments, but we even went out there to do a public participatory workshops in various areas where we see that space is a key factor. So I would say in that regard that there is inclusiveness in the process. Over and above that, a question was asked about the legal framework. Does our legal framework cover the ratification? Before we bring the whatever we're ratifying to the cabinet and for this process, we consult the state law advisors within the Department of Foreign Affairs, the then Department of Foreign Affairs, who actually would write an opinion that would cover what is the legal framework of the country, which will actually also refer to whether this will impact on the state's legal framework. So that has been looked at. We also consult the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to actually look at the ratification and whether it will have anything negative for the country to actually ratify the treaties. So that is what I would say as far as inclusiveness of the process. But over and above that, we send letters over and above the representative of department sitting in the council. We send letters to the various DGs of the government department. Another question was asking a question of why is this sitting at the DTI and not at state security or defense. That question we have actually had a number of times. And after hearing that question, we have looked at what is the occurrence in other nations. We've noticed that there is a mixed bag. In other countries, it's within the DTI. In other countries, it's within foreign affairs. In other countries, it's within defense. In other countries, it's at the president, which we think maybe in the future, that is where it could be appropriately placed. But as I'm saying, it has been a mixed bag. It's depending on the focus of that particular state, whether the state would like to use a space program for defense purposes. Then it's sitting at defense. Whether a state is looking at ensuring that we use the space to actually get societal benefits, socio-economic benefits, and whether we would want to ensure that there is a conducive environment for the industry that is within the sector to thrive, then it's sitting there. But more towards clarity about how it started, it's because the Space Affairs Act, which is the primary legislation of the country, is sitting at the DTI. It was actually developed by the DTI, and DTI is the custodian of such. And as a result, that act establishes the council, as I've mentioned. The act also establishes or requires that we actually formulate a space policy to be followed by the Republic. So what are the functions of the council in this regard, which actually would actually tell us whether it's having links with the DTI? But I think we must have a sort of a broader view of what the DTI would like to do in this instance for the entire government of South Africa. Excuse me. As I've mentioned earlier on, the Space Council is serves as an advisor to the DTI and specifically the Minister of the DTI. It serves as a regulatory body. It's regulating. As you would see that we also have other regulatory bodies such as CIPRO within the DTI, the Competition Commission, the ITAC, International Trade Agreements Commission. It's within that the bigger ambit of regulating the commercial activities within the country. So the council is having that role of regulating. It is also having an advocacy role. As most people have been saying that here, space is sort of a new arena, and most of us, we don't know much about it. It's regarded as an elite sector for only very, very rich countries. And there is a very big role for the council to play advocacy in terms of telling the entire public what space is all about, what can we derive from space, what are the benefits of space, what space, how can we link space, because it's sort of very far up there, to what we have here in the country, what can we do for us as the society. So that is the role that will be played within the council itself. Maybe advocates will...
Majalja. Minister, did you want to come in just at this point?
Okay. Thank you. Chairperson, the other question is about, was about funding. Who is funding? The main funding element here would be to establish a national register, which when we have when I was making the presentation, I mentioned that the DTI would have to establish that register and maintain it on a regular basis, as and when space objects are being manufactured and launched within the country. So the states actually incur their various costs, which requires them to implement the convention themselves. I've talked to the legal framework. There is a question which I did not really get on the conventions from the Honorable Member Njikelana. He mentioned that when the conventions were negotiated at some point in time in the 70s, I didn't get the second part of the question regarding the negotiation of the conventions in 1975 and 1972 respectively for these.
I think perhaps Honorable Njikelana, if you could just state the question again, please.
Let me restructure my question. How old are all these conventions?
How old are all these conventions?
72.
All right, thank you.
Because reference here in page 1 is made to 5 conventions, but in page 2 or article or slide 4, what are you talking of 2? Right.
Thank you. Yes, yes, I did get that one. Thank you. The conventions, honourable, has been or were negotiated some time ago, not at the same time, gradually over time. The two ones in question today. When negotiated, this one actually was adopted in 1972, the international liabilities. The other one was adopted in 1975. Maybe you would want to ask, why are we only ratifying now? Is that what you're asking?
Not necessarily, because we are still apartheid in 1975.
Yes.
So we are a new government.
Yes, yes.
Through your check.
For responses, I think that it's that kind of anomaly about also the time between ratification and so on and so forth. And if it was in fact adopted so much earlier, and now we're going to ratify it now, so much may have changed. So if you would deal with some of those implicit questions that are there.
Okay. Maybe let me take it as a representation. Or in the agency, and leave that one for advocate. The space agency is in the process of being established. Recently, the DST formulated a panel which set to actually come up with a number of representatives from various government departments. So the agency is still in the making, and we believe that all government departments, including the DTI, will be part of the space agency. They are also part of the DTI. I think I will take those questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I also recognize the Minister here, protocol observed. Now, the main thrust of today's engagement then is the liability and registration. let me deal with specific questions then that were raised. One relates to communications in WTO. Right, that as you are aware, that's a different platform at WTO, and also you've got a specific department that is dealing with all the issues related to communication. And you've also got a regulator, the ICASA, and all the players there, the competition in that environment. It's another legal regime. So it becomes very difficult then to link the liability convention to that, I mean, to that sphere of regulation of communications. Communication simply becomes a service. It is just like the landing of an aircraft. Let's say there's a storm or fog over Johannesburg. You also use space there for that aircraft to land. It could be a ship at sea here next to Cape Town. Fishing, you also use space there to say, if it's fishing, what direction to take so that they can get whatever product they are looking for, fishes, whatever. That is, again, navigation and positioning. Another aspect, it will be remote sensing, weather services. Again, that one, I'm simply saying these are specific activities related to space, but liability is confined to a question asked here, what is the space object? This convention, it narrows, it simply relates to what have you taken to outer space. What were you trying to take to outer space? A space object is any activity that is launched, propelled, pushed. I'm trying to simplify that term, launching. When you are launching, you use a rocket. It is like a gun, a bullet from a gun. You are launching that bullet. It goes from a gun. Now, when you are launching, you launch from a launching pad. By the way, you do have a launching pad. It's at OTB, Overberg. Overberg, here in Western Cape. That is the base way from there was a question that was asked here about the space object. Mm-hmm. So anything that you are launching, then you are propelling it. It doesn't matter whether it has gone to the outer space. Outer space, by the way, is not necessarily the moon, because you think of Apollo and the moon. You have launched that. You are attempting to launch. It goes up and then it goes down. If it has not reached the target to be where you wanted to place that object, it could be it's a rocket. You attach that to a rocket. Or let me say again, it's like a missile. It's a rocket. It's like a cricket. You attach that, and then you launch it. Any piece, in case of an explosion, it will come down if it has not reached the outer space. When it comes down, it may hit one's house, it may hit one's car, it may injure a person. There was a piece that landed in the Western Cape not long ago. I think it's after 2000, year 2000, again on the Western Cape territory. It is a piece that came from a dead satellite which was in the outer space, which had served a purpose, reached its end of life, and it could not be bent out by the sun and other factors in the atmosphere. That small piece, it could be like the top of this table or bigger. It's in Pretoria, one of the samples in one of the stations of CSR. That small piece landed here. It could have hit a person. So that is a space object. A space object is any item related to that activity of a that we're trying to do as a state launching. So I think I've answered now this issue of the space object and launching. Now, liability convention then relates to one member asked here, what is this strict liability? What is fault? If an object was successfully launched, and then that satellite landed, it reached its end of life, like the one piece that landed on the territory of South Africa, Western Cape. If it had hit damaged, it had hit a person damaged or injured, because that incident is taking place on the surface of the earth, it is strict liability. The person, the state that launched, must take full responsibility, because that event is taking place on the surface of the earth. Now, if the land, if the sea, the ground water, your sea, you mean the waters around all the ocean, your as far as your territory goes, and then other territory is the atmosphere, airspace. If it has hit an aircraft above your surface, your airspace, again, that is strict liability. It simply says who launched must take responsibility. There's no question of saying was that person at fault or otherwise. It's simply strict liability. You take responsibility for that. Now, the other one where we say fault is when an event takes place in outer space. Outer space is supposed to be an area for common good for every person. That's why if a satellite of America is hit by a satellite of Russia, as it happened not long ago, there you need to establish who was at fault. If at the space station an American rocket trying to dock, it injures a component of another state, again, the scientists must establish, was there any other way of avoiding that accident? Hence, you've got to that establishment of fault regime. But even then, there's a serious element of saying the space is for human good. They try to minimize all those things. But that is the difference between absolute and the other one, and strict fault and strict liability. I hope that is key. For the purpose of this meeting, then, for me again to allay the concerns of the members here, if we are to launch Sumbandila, and then Sumbandila, then there's something that's happening, let's say it's ending its life, and then it hits an object, whatever causes damage, whether this convention is there or not, there are principles of international law. But the unfortunate thing about principles of international law is that they are neither here nor there. It's just international law in the broad sense. Whereas the convention simply tries to establish rules, to say, look, this is the convention, these are the rules, this is the regime that must be followed in case of a claim. You have got international law standing there. As I said, it's just like broad international law. And it's not given that when a satellite ends its life, it comes down. It's taken to a higher orbit, and then it's affected by so many factors there, and it dissipates. Rarely do they come down. So again, we are not saying when we run to Bandula, then we have that responsibility. It's called it space debris, space rubbish, and a number of satellites are in the atmosphere. Now, what else now? Now, the funding for...
Penalties. Compensation.
In terms of the convention. All right, you establish damage. If a piece of a satellite is hitting a one house, then there should be a valuation of the house. These are the normal things, like a car hitting one's house. Then you need to establish the value of the house. Damage to a person, or it's like the same procedure, similar to what we'll be doing when assessing the damage or injury caused to a person. You use diplomatic means to negotiate. If you fail, and then you've got that commission where one is a representative of South Africa, two, one representing Russia. I'm simply giving an example, the case of Sumbandila. A third one will be the chairperson appointed by the two. In case they disagree with this third person to chair, you approach the Secretary General of the United Nations to assist, appoint a quote-unquote neutral person. And then that is the procedure, and then you determine the way forward. But more often than not, it's always diplomatic channels that are used here. All right.
There's a question that we got answered. How old is this speaker?
The treaties are very old. Most, there are five treaties. There are five treaties. They are so linked. A number of states are participants. There's only one treaty that has received the least number of ratifications and or signatures. It is the Moon Treaty, which is not here. But the four treaties, they are linked. That South Africa is not a party to these treaties. I guess it's part of, first is because of before 94 period, and then after 94, South Africa was not active in space activities. So there was that lag. Before 94, South Africa was like had a problem with other nations, but South Africa had a space program using other norms of international law. But then after 94, unfortunately, we shut down the program, and we lost, unfortunately, some of the momentum. But that is why you've got that gap. The renewal of these treaties, they are constantly every year in Vienna, which is a specialized committee of United Nations. It's called the Committee on Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. These treaties are yearly, every year, they are discussed. Yes, indeed, they may be reviewed, amended. Again, it depends on the will of the member states. That's why the member state of that Committee of United Nations. It's a club of few countries, about 68 or so. Yeah. So that's why there's a party there, but that's why it's a party, but it is not a party to this convention. Another anomaly, because you are there as a country, but in some of the conventions, you are not really participating like this one, except to rely on international law. It's an anomaly, so to say. Yes, they may be amended, they may be reviewed, but again, when they are reviewed, it opens the can of worms, because it may take another 10 or 20 years for parties to sign. Hence, they are there now, and they are working so far. And then most states are saying, if it's not broken, don't fix, leave it. That is the attitude. I think, let me pause there, unless there's a specific question then relating to this. And then only to say then, besides, if South Africa becomes a party, and then there's an incident, Sumbandila, our satellite, is insured. All states, before they launch, they insure. They take insurance policy. It is insured so that in case of any damage, there's money that is there to take care of this incident. So that one is always, it's a normal thing, it's always taken care of that way. I tell you.
What is you yes, mentioning our satellite?
Hello. Yeah. Let's just come in on the air. Yeah. But you were just kind of jumping in. I know Honourable Jikalana did this, and so did Honourable Turok in a previous meeting. But we need just to, come through the chair.
Okay, sorry, Chair. I just didn't want to miss this because I heard you mentioning something in Sumbangile.
Yes.
Oh.
What is this Sumbangile? I don't know what I'm meant. I mean, I'm actually
pronouncing it.
That would be the first of the follow-up questions, you see. So let's just, because I had earlier said the minister will just come in at this point and then we'll do our follow-up.
Thanks, Chair. First, I want to speak to the issues of... Actually, I want to first welcome the fact that we've got content specialists. We were not that lucky, so we did a lot of research on our OGU. I used to leave the office very late at night because I did my own work before I go to meeting. So we should welcome that. But we need to utilize that for discussions of this nature, because you are not technicians as members of parliament, you are politicians. Therefore, if there's a subject matter that needs to come before you, you need to be told in advance so that the content specialist can help you to understand the issue that you are going to discuss. I think it needs to. So this department, which I belong to, also should take note that it needs to make sure that you get information in advance to familiarize yourself with that information for you to be able to make meaningful contributions. Secondly, I want to agree with Honorable Gotsi.
we, when I was still a member of parliament, we insisted that treaties, when they come before parliament, they can't just come for notification of parliament when you don't know the contents and perhaps you don't even agree. The speaker was very keen, the then speaker, Mrs. Baleka, was very keen on connecting that with the leader of government business. But I don't know how far is that process to make sure that members actively participate. I was telling Mr. Jigela and Mr. Venturok that, for instance, when we go to Luxembourg and other places to attend issues of the Doha Round, it will be very important for MPs to attend. So it's something that we need to always remind the executives. I don't speak on your behalf, but I'm still fresh. You see, my memory is still very fresh of how it's like to be in. So we need to find a way of communication between the two. Secondly, I'm new in the department. There might have been a presentation made to the minister on these issues, but I cannot speak. I can only speak on my general knowledge when I chair defense on issues of space. I wanted to answer the member here that, you see, there is a competition of getting access to space. They can tell you their technicians, they know it. That it's not easy to launch your own satellite because of the space. It's so cramped with many different satellites from other countries that South Africa is not so lucky. So having been sanctioned makes it even difficult. But we should also remember what are the priorities of government. For the fact that there is a satellite that will be launched, it's actually an achievement. We should know that. I think we should move from that spirit. It is, I think you need to switch off your microphone. So it is an advantage for us. So we should look at that. But the priorities of government, the social spending, is not even on science and technology that much, but it's part of it. So we should. In relation to what she tried to explain about the reporting lines, you see, part of DTI is part of the economic cluster, and the security cluster is clustered in that. So you have DICO in there. He misses what I'm answering now because he's not here. DICO is there, and what you call state security is also there. So whatever discussions that ensues in the security cluster, there's a long name, I can't say the long name of our cluster, the cabinet cluster, they are there. So it gives them privilege to also participate in those debates. So it's not only about regulatory framework, they make inputs as state security and as intelligence in this. I think Honorable Chris, you'll be relieved on that. So they make inputs in that. But remember that space is also a commodity. It's not only seen as something that is utilized for launching spacecraft and airships. It's also a commodity where the commercial craft travel. So we are interested in anything that has to do with economics as a department. So that's how it gets to affect us in one way or other. But I want us, because this debate that he is raising, we need to have a discussion later, so that you can understand, because a question arose, how many of these countries are part of the treaty, and who they are they friends of South Africa? So if you need to know more, I think that a presentation needs to come to the department to make sure that, including what he said about the viewer of treaties. So you need to get some more presentation so that we can get more clarity. So I will speak to Rob about the role of parliamentarians in treaties, so that they should not only come here for ratification, because maybe he got a presentation from them. I might not necessarily know the content, and I attribute that to my newness in the department, that it might have been an outstanding matter for presentation, so that the minister himself can come to speak, so that you don't get only technical presentations, because that's what you receive today, but you get a political understanding why they need to sign this treaty. Because that's one thing that you always used to say, that people get technical presentations. For instance, the explanation of launching is not what you really need to know, but you need to know why the importance to sign that treaty and to ratify it as politicians. Therefore, the minister himself, if he's not available, we will have to do that as a DM to explain that to you, so that by the time you ratify in parliament, you are fully satisfied with the ratification itself. And I'm saying this because at one point, there were certain, when I was still an MP and a chairperson, we were not satisfied with certain ratifications that had to be made. And later, we realized that we were correct
in what we were saying. Sometimes we hastily get ourselves involved because technicians find it comfortable, but politicians later realize that this is not what you want. So we need to strike a balance between the two. Hence, I'm saying I will talk to the minister on that one. I also am satisfied with how he explained the issue of a fault and how damage to property. Because, for instance, I wanted to make an example about one of the treaties on munitions. You know, certain munitions got shrapnels, and shrapnels is pieces. For instance, if they launch a certain munition, it's so dangerous that the shrapnels can kill other people. That's what he was trying to explain to you about damage. So, but it's rare cases, like he said. It's only on rare cases that that can happen. It's out of 100%, it's one case. Unlike in defense. In defense, you go to Sudan and the Janjaweed use booby trapping. They go against rules of engagement, you know, in any war. And what becomes the role of the South African forces who went there on a peace mission? Shouldn't they reciprocate booby trapping if they're booby trapped? It's another discussion altogether. So this one is still a little bit safe in my own understanding, not a deeper understanding, because I have not, I have engaged with the issues of this data at a general knowledge from here. So I answered some of your questions, Comrade Sisa, but it was in our passes. I said that the minister from a political level will have to come and explain, especially on who are these people that are part of this treaty. You know, are they friends of South Africa? Is there a need to review the treaties themselves? So I think we'll engage on this matter, because this was a highly technical presentation, and from a political perspective, that still needs to be done so that we can allay your fears on that part. I don't know whether it covers you, Chair and members, that response. Thank you.
Yes, Minister, I think what is concerning all of us sitting here is that one of the first things we asked, in the same way we asked the Gambling Board, now, it's here before us. What deadlines are you looking at? Because, you know, when documents and treaties, etc., are tabled in Parliament, as you know yourself, these don't necessarily come before the committee immediately. But particularly now, in the current time constraints, when the State of Nation and the budget had to take precedence over everything else, and the shortage of venues, quite clearly, it was impossible to have it before now, you know, due to that. But having said that, it still was not clear to me, and I was trying to get hold of my own legal advisor here, exactly how much time do we have to process this? You see, because I think if we can get the department to give us that information right at the beginning, it's tabled, but what time do we have? What is the deadline? And the second question that I know has arisen in the committee, and it's one that you alluded to right now, is, so we have a treaty before us. We have a convention before us. Now, it calls for Parliament's approval so that it can ratify this. An approval to ratify, is that going to mean simply briefing us and then Parliament says yes or no? You know, it's those issues that are not exactly clear, because why do you bring it to Parliament unless it is a constitutional requirement? And I'm very new in the committee, as you are aware. So if those two or three things can be explained to us from the department side, from the ministry side, it's going to help us. I don't think we want to unnecessarily delay something that may be urgently required, but we don't want to set a precedent in this fourth term just to now start pushing things through, which is what did occur in these international treaties, as you are aware, in the third term to a large degree.
Yes, like I'm saying, that because maybe I'm new, maybe the minister is aware. Yes, I said I'll go back to him so that I can find out. And in terms of you ratify, only Parliament can ratify treaties. That's the one good thing about it. It's only you who can agree or disagree. We as the executive, we can sign agreements with people, but we need to consult you first, which I agree that it never happened in the past. Now I will consult the minister on this one.
And I, like I said earlier on, before it is ratified, a political presentation will have to come to you so that you clearly understand, because this is highly technical. It only explains processes. It doesn't give you what is the politics behind this treaty. Hence, I'm saying I will go and consult with the minister. Actually, I will try to do it right away when I leave here, if he's in the office, to just quickly, so that, because they also don't know the date. So we don't know by when should this treaty. I don't know, but they can maybe give more on details. So I will talk to the minister.
And what we're going to do is to the department will be able to come back again, the chief director. There may be certain follow-up questions. I also know that some people, I don't know if it's the subject matter or what, but may have obviously need a coffee, tea, water, or that kind of thing. But I'll tell you what we could do. We'll ask the questions first. We could have a comfort break or whatever, just for 5 minutes, and then get the responses. Now,
may I ask for a point of order? My questions have not been answered, and perhaps my two questions have not been answered. I don't know whether they don't have the answer now and they will provide them later, but at one point, now or later or in the future, I would like to have those two answers because they're critical to at least my own understanding of what we're doing.
Minister? I looked at those questions and I said, we'll come. You see, these questions, it's questions that relate on whether should we have more satellites, and it's highly political. And I said, government's focus in the current juncture is social spending. So if you know how much is a satellite and how much poverty we have in the country, the preference would be to eradicate poverty over any other thing. And for the fact that we're having this new satellite being launched together with the Russians, it's a great achievement for South Africa. But I said, if we need further details on those issues, we can come back. And this needs ministers to answer. Yes. If you look at the questions, they need us to respond to those questions. Not necessarily people who are doing processing of those. Because the officials haven't decided at any point when should a satellite launch be launched, unless they have a approval of political office bearers. And I'm saying, they are dealing with the regulatory framework, not even the implementation. The implementation happens in science and technology with the advice of CSIR, who happens to deal with research and development within the department. If that does not suffice for now, we will come back. Hence I said that certain questions we take responsibility for, and the department will do that. But I think they have tried to cover ground in terms of what they need to respond to.
Now, I was going to suggest that it certainly appears, I'm just waiting, of course, also for the minister's response to us the deputy minister's response after consulting with the minister. Because clearly, the kind of responses, some of the responses, are not going to be answered by the chief director and the advocate. I mean, that's clear. They're not. But we want those responses. And we're entitled to them as well. So what I would like to do is get through what can be done now, and then to, at the end of the meeting, to decide when we can call the ministry back again, the minister and deputy minister, because on the 6th of July we already, I believe, may be closing this particular session, as it were. However, that does not prevent committees carrying on with their work. So I hope, Honourable Umbrosini, is that clear understanding? We're not letting anyone off the hook at all. I think that needs to be clear, and I think the Deputy Minister fully understands that herself and accepts that. But we're going to just do certain follow-ups for the moment, and this may be done quite swiftly. I certainly would like to come in with one myself. There was great reference to the liability and explanations in that regard and damages and so on. What really interested me is how do you even begin to identify, for example, that piece that fell off. You know, I imagine the registration is not packed all over the place. So how do you deal with the identification of such a piece if it's not coming down intact, as it were? The other thing is that there was some reference by the officials that, you know, we haven't really launched anything and so on and so forth. But, in fact, students some time ago did launch a satellite. It was experimental and so on. And that would have been about 10 years ago. And it was developed by Sunspace. I'm not sure if that, you know. So what is interesting is that the process now that we, you know, did that particular satellite go through the legal processes that we now are going to, we envisaging that we required embarking on and so on. And the other thing which, Minister, I think you have begun to address, but I think we'll need the Minister to come back again and deal with it, are the benefits from these, from the launch, the socio-economic benefits from that experimental satellite. What did they bring to South Africa, and what lessons did we learn from that? We haven't heard anything about that, and you may wish to just think about that before coming back to us, because you will be coming back. I think that decision's already taken. So let's have further follow-ups then. We have Honourable Ntuli on my right, Honourable Mabasa on my right. You also have Honourable Kotsi's question, but I think it has already been answered, to, in fact. Honourable Njikalana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like, before I ask my question, I would like just to suggest, as we know that we've got a plenary at 12, that what if, as members, we just pose these questions and then they just take them, not to reply now, but they take them for the bad course, eh? Then they give it to the ministers, and then when the minister, because most of them will be political, so it will be better if we just give them and then they go instead of trying to that's my suggestion. I wanted to, they said 5 years, 6 years ago, Nigeria launched the space.
I'm sorry, has somebody got a mic on
here? No, I'm not. Is it making noises? Oh, sorry about that.
I
heard the noise myself. But sorry, I'm still trying to learn how it works. It was not me. My apologies.
Yeah, I think this one as well is also political. That 5 years, 6 years ago, Nigeria launched a space agency. They launched it in a bid to develop satellite technology and identify area for mining. Now we want to check whether is it wise that South Africa launch its own instead of...
Look, I want all cell phones switched off. I actually listen with one ear.
I'm sorry.
I want to listen.
I discovered my mic was not closed.
Then I used
the Sorry.
Yes, please.
I was trying to close it instead.
Honorable Njikalana.
I think we have to help Njikalana with his gadget. It gave him trouble yesterday in the house. Maybe we need to take out it battery layer. No, I was saying whether is it not advisable that what will be the cost if South Africa uses that space agency that Nigeria, together with Nigeria, instead of launching our own. But I think this also is political for the minister to answer. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Right, Honourable Mabasa.
Colleague Chair, mine, the first one was not answered from the first set where I was saying what will be the schematic, you know, which will make us to see the world, how, you know, how we fit in. That's the one part. And then the other one is, how do we make sure that there is capacity built in this area within the country? Are there certain universities that work on these, because, you know, if we are not careful, we may find that we may have to import skills. If we have imported skills, it must be with an aim that in the medium term we are able to cover that space ourselves.
Yeah, is it possible to answer the first question before you take others?
I think there was some proposal about completing. I think there are some questions that clearly are quite easy to answer and can be done so now. From the first one, yes, we will be. But we still have one more person coming on. Honourable Njikalana.
Chair. The community, given that we've implemented about space issues through a specific issue, but what is being triggered here, there is more to it than just ratification of two conventions. My humble appeal was, one, can the chief director or through her directorate organize a full e-library. I don't like cutting down papers. E-library through the DTI's website. Put everything so that we can access for general reading. Because we are asking things, but if you sense that people are beginning to ask, is the issues broader and beyond just the ratification of the two conventions? You know, how many conventions are there? Even Sombandila initiative, you know, where does it start, what is its purpose? Because there are many purposes for satellites, you know. And to me, also, I wanted to be clear about, you know, which global agencies deal with these, because there are obviously a number of them. Today, we've got a document on policy, but reference is made to strategy, and where is that document, you know? So an e-library of everything would be helpful. The second one, long term, is that it would be helpful if we could, after the library, we can get a little bit of a full briefing, you know, on the topic, where we can pull in the other departments, DST, DIRCO, CSIR, and a couple of experts together with the portfolio committees. The last one, Chair, and then I'll be quiet. As a matter of practice, maybe the DTI should give us a list of institutions, agencies, and programs not yet introduced to the portfolio committee. Because we've had this experience in the past, particularly the Council for Non-Proliferation of Weapons of Mass Destruction. And when it was presented to us, we were just a spinning wheel because we had not been exposed to it. So it would be helpful just in the long term as a matter of practice that we know what has not yet been introduced to us so that we can prepare for those in good time. Thank you.
We do have one outstanding question which we're not parking. We know we are parking Honourable Ambrosini's question, if you recall. But let's get the other responses that I know you did not need to park.
Chair, actually, Honourable Mabaso's question, it relates to privileged information. Because it's like you're asking the Portfolio Committee on Defense to tell you whether one of its frigates, radar, how much can it cover to see the enemy's frigate coming. It's like you're saying that. And because you want to know how much the satellite can cover. Mm-hmm. So, I beg your indulgence on that one. Yeah, they will find it difficult to explain that to you on that one, but we can try maybe to give general information on it.
Thank you, Chairperson and Deputy Minister. And maybe if I can start specifically with the member's question on Nigeria's agency and the satellite. I really appreciate the fact that Honourable Njikelana requests that we make an e-library as well as make a full briefing on the topic. I think it's something that is very necessary.
for members to understand what is taking place. Because there has been so much that has taken place. The government, I would say, has taken a stand to say, let's resuscitate our space program. The advocate mentioned that we had a space program before during the previous regime, but that space program was shut off. Then recently the government has said, let us resuscitate our space program, but let us focus our space program towards ensuring that we get societal benefits, such that we tackle a number of socio-economic challenges that we have as the country. The challenges that we have mentioned, or services that we have mentioned earlier on, as communication, as navigation, remote sensing, natural resource management, health and education. There are a number of challenges that we have in this country, which we can actually tackle using data from satellites. So that is the focus of government at the moment. And that is why we have a policy which serves as a guiding framework on what this country should do. This policy is actually serving as a coordination framework which says, as a country, we know that we have been in the space arena for some time now. We have been doing a number of things. Advocate mentioned about the OTB. We've got the SunSat at some point in time, SunSpace. We've got a number of space, I would say, stakeholders. But we have been doing a number of little things in our corners without coordination. And this policy is what is trying to achieve. To say, let's come together as the country, be it government departments, be it government agencies, be it industry, and so on and so forth. Let's come together and see how we can move forward in having a space program in the country. And that is what is entailed here. The objectives of the policy, what is the space program has to achieve, the principles based on peaceful uses of outer space, and all those things, including capacity building that was raised here. So on top of the policy, there is a strategy which the document of is not yet available. But the document is available, but it's not bound as such for now. It was led by the DST. The strategy actually builds on the policy. The policy sets a foundation of what this country has to do in the new dispensation. Then the strategy comes in to build on that foundation to say these are priority areas that this country will look at going forward, looking at the space technology platform. We will look at economic growth and innovation. That's one priority area stipulated in the strategy. We look at environmental management and resource management. We will look at public safety as well as security of public security of the country. So those are the things that have been highlighted in the strategy.
What I'd like to do, thank you very much, Chief Director. It's we really have to close this meeting now. So what we need to say, Ms. Majaja, is that we do appreciate you coming here and giving us the kind of technical admin background. But some of the questions and some of the concerns that members have are beyond your own function, quite frankly. And we do need the political input. I mean, as you sit here, you yourself would be unable to tell me what the deadline is, as you acknowledged. And I think that, am I correct?
Actually, I could respond to that.
What is the deadline, please?
There isn't a specific deadline, Chairperson, but we would appreciate if the committee could interrogate the
I'll say that the treaties, as it is convenient to them, such that they could be passed to Parliament for ratification. So we would request the committee to adopt the policies after they have interrogated it to their satisfaction.
I'm glad that there's no rush. So we you know, that will certainly be extremely helpful, because Parliament is under a lot of pressure at the moment. So on that particular note,
I needed to take advantage of the
Honourable Mabasa. Can I just check something with you? If this is a question, can it wait until outside the meeting? Otherwise, it's going to be answered in the next meeting, because all of us here have to leave here at 5:30, no later. So I want to, there was a proposal put here that said, please make a note of outstanding questions in the follow-up process. Have those on board. We ourselves will send a letter indicating further issues, and the minister herself, the deputy minister, will be able to brief the minister indicating the issues that have come up and why we want them to come back. I think that's understood. So on that note, I would like to, at this moment, release the department, please. And then just for members to remain behind for 1 minute, because you will probably see from the schedule you were given that this, in technically, was our last meeting, the one of the schedule you were given. Am I right? This month, for July. Now, this is not going to be our last meeting necessarily, unless, of course, we're in a position to take a decision in principle now about what we raised much earlier, and that was the DTI oversight type of visit and orientation, which they invited us to attend, and I think it's round about Raj's here, the 22nd of, here it is right here, the 22nd to 23rd July. It's been cut down further. 22nd, 23rd. Is it 2 days now? Pardon? 3 days. It's a 3-day orientation oversight, and it's occurring then. And if we want to avoid another meeting next week, it's going to be useful for us to take, in principle, a decision. The trip has been funded entirely by DTI. That is still with the Chair of Chairs, the Honourable Obed Bapela, and of course also with the Chief Whip. But if those, in fact, are agreed to, we would certainly like members to give us an idea of whether of their availability, and then we can communicate with you if the trip goes ahead, as as the invitation has put forward. Clearly, there will be one or two areas that we may wish to change in the light of our committee discussions that we've had. But in principle, it would be a 3-day trip. So are there any problems that anyone has here with the principle itself?
What are the dates again, sir?
Proposed at this date, the 23rd and
24th. All right. Having said that, we also said that we need a committee strategic Lahotla, our own strategic Lahotla. And it certainly seems as if that would need to take place sometime in August or so. And we will communicate with you in that regard as well, but that will be through correspondence. And we would want all committee members on board so that we actually take decisions here, like just reference the issue that's come up now. How much time do we need to go through the process of approving these ratifications? And we do have a content specialist, etc. And do we want a briefing as soon as it's tabled so that we can explore it and how we would run things. That's simply an example of that kind of thing, because we don't want to rubber stamp any agreements, no matter how useful they are. There were many other things that came out in the last meeting, as you are aware, about the whole cooler issue, which in our recommendations, if you read them, it's an extensive list. It's a wish list. And we will need, as a strategic in a strategic session, to just fine-tune that and say exactly what do we want DTI to undertake, per se, in the next 6 months, in the next year, that we ourselves can exercise the oversight of. Every time you ask DTI to do something, you're asking yourself to do double the work. And how many of you are going to be here on a Saturday? On a Monday, on a Friday. I'm just saying, you know. So I'm just putting this to you. And the alternative, the Chief Whip said, is for us to sit at night. Now, you think that hasn't been done? The first 5 years, yeah, they sat until 11 o'clock. Gauteng legislature also sat until 11 o'clock. So it's up to us. What do we think is critical, and how much time do members have? I think this is, and we're not going to resolve that today. But what I would like to do is thank all the members who've been part of this committee, those who are not here as well, and who've contributed to the committee from every party, all members here. Secondly, those who participated in the debate as well. And I must say, I'm certainly learning a lot. I hope that other new members are also learning a lot, so that we really can do what we are required to do, as the President has indicated, as the leaders of other parties indicated in the SONA address, that we can effectively oversight the executive, but also check out on other entities for which we are responsible to ensure that the people of South Africa are serviced effectively with quality services. Whether or not they voted for this party or that party, they are people of South Africa, and the most vulnerable come first. So from my side, thank you. I'll only take two questions or comments.
Mine is a follow-up, Colleague Chair, because in one of our previous meetings, I had indicated that I had picked up that there will be a conference in KZN on cooperatives. And then it is apparently it is starting today, and then I think it will end maybe. But here, my worry, my concern is that if the department runs with issues such that we are left behind, especially where, because they have organized co-ops to be there physically, we will not have a capacity to ourselves organize the same co-ops for ourselves. So I would have thought that we should have worked with them so that we assist each other, and that so that we see our space there. So that's just let me raise it rather as a challenge. And I'm raising this because I picked up from the other committees that sometimes we only find over 5 years. There are certain committees that only did oversight twice, that only went out to see things twice. So, thanks.
It's a quick response to that. It's a financial issue. Now, I did say this at the very first committee, but at that stage you were not a member of the committee on the Mabasa that we held, you see. It is a financial issue. I know that committees, other departments have invited committees during this period to attend some of these functions, and certainly that can be taken up with the Minister today. But it is actually a financial issue why oversight is not in oversight visits of this nature, seminars included, are not currently receiving funds. That's the actual issue and nothing else. But I think it is an important thing, and I will personally raise it with the Minister today. Thank you. Yes, Honourable Ndikelana.
Chair, in the past, the practice was that DTI would circulate through both email and hard copy all their activities. I'm sure it's just a miss this time. And then it would be up to members if one activity is outside, you know, the approval, as we have indicated, that a person, an individual, makes his or her own way to the activities. And I trust and hope Mr. Rosenheide is around. She could revive that practice. It was very, very helpful, and some of us would just, on their own volition, go to those activities. I'm sure that would be helpful. And with regards to the orientation program, I fully support it by DTI, but let me just indicate that I'd like to present a few ideas to the committee, just circulate them on how it could be structured, because it would be helpful for us to say what is it that we want to know. Because at the end of the day, the oversight work is going to be done by us over DTI. Thank you.
I think, Saroj, you will take this up, because it's a very difficult issue now. Today you ask the minister, even if he says yes, we must get the approval of the chair of chairs, because it's a minister's invitation. You know, these things don't just happen if someone invites you. We all know that there's a process involved. But nevertheless, I'm sure you'll also raise it yourself. On that particular note, let me remind members of the MANCO that there's a meeting on Friday, is it? At 8:30. Unfortunately, our committee secretary is not here, and you know, he's at Stellenbosch also pursuing his studies, and but that was in fact the agreement. But members of MANCO are only about 5 people anyway. I'm looking at Honourable Ndikelana, and I can communicate with him on a one-to-one. But for the rest of us, we are expected to get on with the work of Parliament, and after that, our constituencies. So we will certainly keep in touch with you through email and correspondence. And please, the email that was suggested by Honourable Ndikelana, we can't really have that at the moment. Not every member has email access, because they don't have equipment. Okay, so it's very, very difficult. So until Parliament has provided every member with the relevant equipment, let's get hard copies at the moment. All right, thank you.